Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka, where it's 50 degrees in light rain and mist. Today's Tuesday, July 17th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Police arrested a man at the Westmark Hotel on Friday for allegedly forcing the evacuation of the building when he pulled the fire alarm around 11:30 p.m. 30-year-old Nicholas Mikulski was charged with making a terroristic threat. That is the formal name of the Class C felony that comes with pulling a fire alarm falsely. Sitka Police Lieutenant Barry Allen says Mikulski was involved in an argument with hotel staff when his friend, 24-year-old Forrest Peterson, was cut off from bar service. Peterson was arrested for disorderly conduct. Allen says neither man is still in custody. Also Friday night, police hazed a large brown bear in the 4700 block of Halibut Point Road. The animal was spotted around 10:30 p.m. near a resident's smokehouse. Allen says police fired a rubber slug at the bear and it ran into the woods. A series of camps are taking place this summer at the Sitka Sound Science Center. They cover water, marine life, the forest, and even flight, all parts of daily life in Southeast Alaska. The idea is to reinforce what the students have already learned in school and maybe even prepare them for the upcoming year. And to have fun, too. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
When the tide goes out behind the Sitka Sound Science Center, it reveals a rocky tidal flat. It is a wide expanse of kelp, driftwood, and stones, dotted by pools of seawater. It is an invitation to draw closer to the silvery ocean under the safe blanket of low-hanging gray clouds. It is, quite possibly, one of the most serene places in Sitka. Most of the time.
Oh my God, what?
Every time it's like this big!
I'm not kidding!
That's him! Whoa!
This is Critter Camp.
Look at that!
Put on by the Sitka Sound Science Center, and as the name might suggest, there are 17 children right now, all entering first or second grade next year, combing the tide pools for, well, critters. A young girl walks up to instructor Ashley Bulwark. The girl is holding something in her hand.
A mussel.
A mussel. Yeah, he's called a blue mussel because that's what color he kind of looks, doesn't he? Right here? Yeah. All right, can you put him back where you found him?
Why?
Because where does he live?
In the water.
Right, where you found him, in the water.
The students spend time as a group, and then, under the careful eyes of camp staff and a few volunteers, they wander freely, looking for more critters. Alex Bailey is one of them. He's higher up on the beach than the rest of the students.
Well, I didn't bring my boots.
But that has not stopped him from finding plenty to look at.
Well, I did find a shell that was alive, and there was a little crab in it that never opened, but he was trying to keep his water inside his shell so he can be wet. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. So why does a crab do that?
I don't know, because he likes to be in water. He wants to be in water, mm-hmm. and he doesn't like to be in air and dry.
Alex says he likes looking for critters on the beach, and he's not alone.
I love tide pooling, and I feel right at home with them because they're like, look at this! And I'm like, no way, what did you find? And I'm just really excited all the time.
That is Ashley Bulwark. Officially, she is the logistics coordinator at the Science Center, but the kids call her Miss Ashley. So, Miss Ashley and Miss Elena.
My name is Elena Avery. I am the AmeriCorps volunteer at the Sitka Sound Science Center.
They both have backgrounds in biology and a lot of curiosity. Both Miss Ashley and Miss Elena agree that some of the most fun they have comes when kids ask them a question and they do not know the answer.
And the kids love when they stump the instructor or stump the teacher. And they'll find something and I'll go, I don't know what that is. And I'll have to flip through my field guide and try to figure out what it is. So there's still new stuff.
There were a few camps on the menu this summer. Critter Camp joins programs about water, flight, and the forest. They serve students as young as the ones we met up to those entering fifth grade. There is an aquarium camp set for August, too. That is designed for students in grades 6 through 8. The idea, says Miss Elena, Avery, is to reinforce the things the students learn in their regular classrooms, or, in some cases, to prepare them for the coming year.
If it's something that they've already covered in school. If it's something in summer camp, they can say, oh my gosh, I already know this. I already know what a mammal is. And they can be the kid that is helping explain things. Or hopefully maybe next year, if they're talking about photosynthesis, it's not just this big scary word. It's something that they've seen before in camp. They've kind of experienced it. So it's not as intimidating, and they can go in and learn more.
There's also the hope that what's happening now, at a very young age, could plant the seeds for a lifelong interest in science. After all, the people teaching the camp now were once influenced by science teachers. For Bulwark, it was in the fourth grade.
Her name was Miss DeBall. She was just wonderful, had a ton of energy, and she was actually my science teacher for fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, Lots and lots of fun every year. It was great.
And for Avery?
As a little child, my science camp was Long Island Sound with my grandfather. So he takes credit for that, and I'll give it to him. But in junior high and high school, I had Dr. Carroll as my chemistry professor, and she had us do projects like make a three-dimensional periodic table. And it helped a lot, and that building really helped get the concepts across.
So someday is some kid going to be sitting in a science center somewhere talking to a radio reporter saying, Miss Elena and Miss Ashley helped me find the chitin on the beach?
I sure hope so.
I hope so.
That would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Awesome.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The city and borough of Juneau is warning residents that new garbage cans provided by trash hauling company Arrow Refuse are not bear resistant. It's illegal in the capital city to leave garbage outside in a non-bear-resistant container except after 4 a.m. on pickup day. Juneau police are cutting residents some slack while they work to educate the public, but officers and state wildlife officials say bears are especially active right now, and the new cans provide an easy source of food. The city faced a similar problem with garbage bears a dozen years ago, which led to the current city ordinance. KTOO's Casey Kelly looks at how today's problem compares.
Photographer Pat Costello served on Juneau's ad hoc urban bear committee from 2000 to 2001. Former Mayor Sally Smith formed the committee after five bears were shot in the capital city in 1 year. Costello says the problem then, as now, had to do with trash. Dumpsters around town had been fitted with flimsy plastic lids.
And the dumpsters, of course, were sitting outside 24/7, so we saw a huge spike in activity with bears, and a whole generation of bears was educated on the whole garbage thing.
The solution then was to replace the plastic lids with metal ones and to have the Juneau Assembly pass an ordinance making it illegal to keep smelly garbage sitting out in a non-bear-resistant container. Costello says some residents are assuming the new garbage cans are okay to leave out.
People think that they're bear-proof, and they definitely aren't.
Juneau Police Community Service Officer Bob Dilley is trying to change that perception. He says police are responding to reports all over town of bears getting into the new cans.
What we're finding is the bears either bounce up and down on top of them or stand on top of them, get the lid to pop a little bit, and then they can use their claws to open them up. So if you're leaving those out in your yard, the bear is likely to get into them.
Wildlife biologist Ryan Scott with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game says it doesn't take long for bears to identify a readily available source of food.
In the past, you know, with the bear-proof or the bear-resistant cans, we might get a bear that gets into a can, and if we can get that remedied, we seem to have pretty good success getting the animal to move on. This year, we are seeing where bears are going from can to can to can.
Scott says the best solution is for people to follow the bear ordinance and not leave garbage cans out, especially when they're full of dinner scraps.
Everybody, I think, knows that lives in Juneau, we have great bear habitat, and if we remove a bear even, we're probably just making a hole for a new bear if the food source is still out there.
Dilley says police are using this time to educate the public about the bear ordinance, but eventually will begin writing tickets again. He says the new containers do meet the city's regulations, so long as they're kept in a bear-resistant structure, except on garbage day. And yes, he's heard from people who built bruin-proof enclosures that are too small for the new cans.
What I tell people basically is if you took the time to build a structure like that and it's been effective in keeping a bear out, you can still keep your garbage in your old cans in that enclosure. And then come garbage day, you can dump it into your new can and then haul that out to the curb.
A dozen years ago, Costello's website, featuring some of his nature photography, included a number of shots capturing Juneau's garbage bears. He says the issues then were much more pervasive than they are now.
their garbage enclosed, as they should under the law, hopefully this won't turn into the same kind of situation.
The current law has been on the books since 2004 and calls for fines up to $300. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
A $30 million road construction project on Prince of Wales Island is underway this summer. The work is a major upgrade to about 12.5 miles of road near the community of Knockety, an unincorporated community of 117 people on the western shore of Prince of Wales. Quentin Smith, roads program manager for the Forest Service, says the existing roadway will be widened and improved.
I think it's officially listed as a lane and a half maintenance level 4 road right now. And we're going to a two-lane highway, 24-foot paved width with shoulders.
The reconstruction work is requiring some substantial excavation of the soil underneath the roadway. Smith says the work will mean more than just a better road connection for Knockety.
At any time of the year, they have what can be a pretty poor road to drive. And once we pave it, the really big benefit for the community is that AP&T plans on putting in a transmission line just as soon as the road's realigned. And so that will cut the cost of power considerably for those members of the community in Knockety.
Work started up this spring. It's being paid for with a combination of state and federal highway dollars. Southeast Road Builders of Haines is the contracting company. Smith says many of the company's 25 workers on the project are from communities on Prince of Wales. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander calls for areas of fog this morning. Light rain and drizzle likely this morning. Highs 55 to 61. Northwest winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, cloudy. Highs around 59. West winds 10 miles per hour. This is KCAW in Sitka.